Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Moon, Moo, and You, The Collective Wisdom. Joan Adams and I host this show. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Our guest this evening is Astrology's Astrologer, or Sheila Odette. She will be discussing the alchemy of Ebenezer Scrooge and D.D. Delaney. And D.D. Delaney will be performing his own adaptation of The Christmas Carol on next week's show, and we'll drop by in a little while to say hello. Delaney and Sheila are old high school friends, and I won't tell you how many years ago that was because I just don't know. So Joan is not here at the moment, so I will bring on our dear Sheila Odette. Good evening.
Hi. Thanks
how
for not saying
you?
How many years ago that was.
Well, I don't really know. So.
You probably weren't born.
Funny.
Yeah, funny.
So,
okay, dear Joan's not there yet.
Not yet, but
okay.
We can catch her up.
Okay. All right. Oh, what I'm going to start to talk about is the alchemy, as you said, of Scrooge. In connection with Delaney, who is the channel of Scrooge, next week on your show, and who's been doing this show for quite a long time, right?
Yeah.
So, wow. Well, you know, I found an old Hebrew saying which says, change can take an instant. It's the resistance to change that takes a lifetime.
Right.
And there is the tale and the myth of Scrooge right there. And so I started to get very obsessed with transmutation, and I'm really interested in the trance words, like transformation, transmutation, transcendence, which is all the process words, because I'm very interested in process. And if anybody is, a lot of your listeners are familiar with the astrological wheel, I do that from... I think the transcendent chart houses are the 9, 10, 11, and 12, which is the top of the chart. And then I think about transmutation and transformation of process, which is the process of the energy of the mind, really. And you go back to the basic thing, which is the first belief. And then the second thing, the way it runs, is that a belief, and then the second is a thought, and the third is a perception, and the fourth is an assumption, and the fifth is action and reaction, which means a basic belief system is set up in childhood. What I was really interested in Scrooge, the old movie, the 1940 movies, was the fact that He was sent away to school. He was sent away to this boarding school, and he basically was left to stay at that school when other children got to go home. And even in that part of the movie, there is then his little sister that runs in, and the sister is this beautiful little girl that is like the divine child that comes in and says, you can come home this Christmas. But still in all, the basic belief there is I'm left all by myself. So you think about all of that and the density of that physical emotion that's really inside of him, which I call the moon in the chart, which holds memories and emotions and attitudes and all of the stuff that has to be really transmuted into gold, which is kind of what I call radical forgiveness. And all of that goes back to, in order to transmute that, you have to go back to, I created this and I forgive myself for that, and I learned everything I needed to learn, and that was what this was all about. So it's very interesting, you know, you change base metal into precious metal. You use a play or a story or a myth such as Scrooge to go into the deeper meaning of everything and what is happening in our country today with the economy and the wealth of certain individuals and the poverty of others. So really, Scrooge, you know, the miser in the archetype represents the resistance to change. And the divine child somehow is instant forgiveness. And, you know, I find that the divine child in Scrooge is Tiny Tim.
Yes.
No matter what, the Cratchit family is all kind of like the divine child, because they have the most, because they have the spirit. They have the joy and they have the spirit, no matter, it doesn't have to be that they have money. Where basically Scrooge is portrayed as lonely and all by himself. And, you know, knowing you should forgive but kind of choosing not to adds kind of the chains of Jacob Marley to your psychic and your spirit, which eventually I think accumulates into kind of dead weight, W-E-I-G-H-T, which for me, I think the word weight equals weight, W-A-I-T. It's weight weighs you down, and then it's like a waiting game. So, you know, it's also, lead is kind of any form of unfinished business or history that you have that's really heavy, and that's where Jacob Marley, you know, the line, you must change your ways or else, and he walks in with a heavy lead weights on him. And there's, you know, these stories at Christmas are very interesting because one that's told over and over is Jesus, and the other one is that's told over and over is Scrooge. One representative of the divine child and the other one representative of the miser. And then, of course, we have the cartoon The Grinch, which is my very favorite, which is kind of a form of Scrooge. And but Jesus, you know, his transmutation, one of his big things was to change water into wine. And when you think about the alchemy of how wine, you know, it's the formation of really organisms that changes sugar into alcohol. But really to make water into wine, it takes like an atomic control or spiritual control or divine knowledge, almost God seed knowledge. And Jesus really understood the physical kind of reactions of matter to thought and demonstrated that one form of matter is in everything, you know, it's in everything that you do, and that really basically the universal mind is zero point, which is quite prevalent these days. Everybody's talking about zero point and zero limits and zero, all of these zero things, which really means, you know, everything goes back to that point. And if you read Greg Braden or any of these people, they're very into this zero point and the electrons, protons, neutrons, and all of the subatomic building blocks and subtle units of energy and light, water and wine, all those things in the material of creations are made up of the same particles somehow, but in different combinations and with different rates of vibration. And I think what we're trying to do these days is where we're coming to is this divine intelligence, which is zero point. And Jesus really represented that, like, you know, 2,000 years ago. But, you know, for me, I think when he was on the cross, he said, they just didn't get this. You know, forgive them, they didn't get it. Well, that's my theory, and who could have heard it anyway? Because they said it was lightning and storming, and Jesus was at the bottom of the and Mary was at the bottom of the cross, and Jesus, when I was 12, I put my hand up in class and said, how'd they hear him? And everybody went, oh, okay. Nobody could hear him. So
I could agree with you more.
What? There you are. How are you tonight?
There you are.
We have storms here, so I have had a time getting to you, but I have been listening. I just couldn't get in.
Ah, hi, sweetie.
Hi, how are you?
I love that voice.
Thank you. I love yours.
Yes, thanks. So it's not quite as elegant as yours, okay?
I do absolutely agree, though, that Jesus said they didn't get it.
No, they just didn't get it.
Didn't get it.
And I don't think we still got it.
We're working on it. We're getting closer, maybe. Oh.
Well, good. If you say that, Joan, I'm sure we are. So, you know, I really come basically from the theater world. So, and I actually kind of moved into the astrological theater world. So I studied dance in New York, and then I went back and studied, you know, astrology in New York. So, you know, I do believe that there are certain actors, and I do believe this because I've been in the theater all my life, that are channels through which they're physical instruments of eternal messages.
Ooh.
And they are really born with these stories and plays within them. Also playwrights, you know, and always in, you know, the Leo world, which is kind of the world of the theater, you know, I think the Aries world is a world of let's do a play, let's do it. But the Leo world is a world of I'll direct it or I'll create it, or the actual theater itself, which means Aries is like a flame that sparks, but Leo is like a lantern. It's like a fireplace. It's like the thing where it happens within. And then the Sagittarius says, let's take it on the road. Let's do it in a million cities. Let's do it all over the world. So the fire, and those are all the fire signs. So they're all really involved in theater. Now, when you really look at Delaney's chart right away, and he's the person who does Scrooge. And it's very interesting, and I know a lot about Delaney. And the thing about Delaney is, I call Delaney like the God seed, because the God seed, really, when he was very young, he did a lot where he lived in nature. And you know, I did a lot of processing in California with Anna Halpern, who I think is also a Leo. And she worked on Mount Tamalpais, and you have to climb halfway down a straight mountain to go into the studio. And there you do emotional processing, which is you do scores or theater pieces. It's the best theater I've ever seen in my world, in this world. But it's regular people from all over the world, like doctors and lawyers and Indian chiefs, that come together in this space, 12 or 14, and act things out in this Leo space. And she's created this. She's done all kinds of things in California. Somebody got raped, and she walked Mount Tamalpais with dancers. They danced around the mountain for, I don't know, I think it was 3 or 4 days, and they couldn't find this rapist. And at the end of the third day, they found him. Mm-hmm. So it was, it's just really, really inspirational work. Anyway, when you look at D.D. Delaney's chart, I look right away to see that the sun is at 15 degrees of Leo. Now, for those who don't understand that, there's 30 degrees in a sign, okay? We do the mathematics, or when you get into the math of astrology, each sign has 30 degrees in it. And you can be born at any degree of that sign. 15 degrees is the very center of the sign. It's the 15 degrees. But for Uranian astrologies, and when I went to New York, I studied Uranian astrology because basically it moved. And I'm from the theater, and I'm a dancer, so I wanted something that could move. So my first teacher was Uranian astrologer, Julian Armstead, who is also a Leo, by the way. I'm really plugging Leos tonight. It's okay. I'm a Leo. I can plug them. Okay. So when you look at a Uranian astrology wheel, there's an Aries point. This is complicated, but after all, and there's three pieces of pie in a Uranian wheel. And on the first piece of pie, you put Aries, Libra, Cancer, and Capricorn, all of the six, all of the cardinal signs. And then you lay everything on top of each other, like Leo, Scorpio, Taurus, and Aquarius. And then all the mutable signs, Gemini, Virgo, Sagittarius, and Pisces, are in another part. So the thing about Uranian astrology that's not a regular contemporary astrology is that you see something pops immediately. Now, what pops about Delaney's chart is that his sun is at 15 degrees right in the center of this wheel. It's hard to explain when you can't see it. But Jupiter and Saturn are also at 15 degrees of Taurus almost, which right away puts all of those things on the zero point of the Uranian wheel, which is the zero point, which is the most powerful point in the universe. Mm-hmm. So you almost look at this person and you say, this is going to be some kind of channel in the theater world. Now, I met Delaney when I was in high school. I was not a friend of Delaney's. I can't, you know, we were not friends. But I was choreographing the Mikado. And he was
really?
Yes.
That's really funny.
Yes, and he was in the Mikado. And so, and then I did Mikado, and then we did South Pacific. But Delaney, for me, for some reason, I just felt he was theater. So I saw him at a party, it must have been 10 years later, and I said to him, what are you doing in the theater now? And he looked at me like I was nuts. And he said, what? And I said, what are you doing? But are you doing something in the theater now? And he said, no. And I said, oh, my God. Well, I said, I had Lancaster Institute of Fine Arts. And I said, why don't you just show up? And sure enough, he did. Him and Jala, his wife, showed up. And they danced, but they were in shows. They were in a lot of shows. And sure enough, he was brilliant. They were, you know, he was just brilliant. And it went on then, as Kate, you know, it went on to the Three Mile Island catastrophe that we had here, which did the Susquehanna Players, which mm-hmm. the street theater, which is a lot like Anna Halpern's. I mean, the street theater and all of those things came out of that, and it went on and on. And sure enough, you know, he was exactly what that first moment I thought he was.
Right, right.
Which is kind of interesting, almost like a tribal thing. So I'm looking at this chart, and when I do a chart, of course, the Mark Edmund Jones thing comes in too, which is there are certain kind of patterns in a chart, in the outside of a chart and the inside of a chart. And he has, so I drew, when I was looking at this chart, I drew a moon over the left-hand side of the chart, the rising, and the moon is the mandala of the chart. So in this chart, there is the sun sign, which is the God seed, but the moon in the whole chart, I'll put it up on the blog, or you will. And I drew the moon around it. You can see that the moon is there. And then I look for the gestation point in the chart, which in this chart, and I always look, it's Capricorn. And Capricorn represents the ancient brain. If you want to look at certain kind of Capricorns or think about them, I have a friend that I work with in Santa Fe who's an antiquity dealer who goes all over the world and gathers antiquities. They deal in ancient things. They deal in ancient memories. They carry like this sacred scroll within them. So this is a Capricorn gestation point and an Aquarius midheaven. And the Aquarius midheaven has to do with the vibrational energy for me. It is like no one can see us now. They can only hear our voice. So that is Aquarius to me. It means the vibration, and everybody's talking about the vibrations lifting and the energies lifting and the vibratory energy. Well, if you have an Aquarius midheaven, that is the vibration within you. Now, an interesting thing about this chart is there's nothing in the ninth after the gestation point. There's nothing in the tenth. When you get to the 11th, there's what I call the play within the play. Now, the play within the play represents plays like Man of La Mancha, Scrooge, things with both sides of the veil in them, okay? Now, he has an Aries-Libra intercepted house in the 11th house. But there's a thing in astrology called the nodes, the north node and the south nodes. The north node looks like earphones down over your ears. They call them dragon tail. And the south node is like they're turned up with little curls on the top. What I see in this chart is that the south node is in Aries and the north node is in Libra. So even though this isn't a transcendent part, even though Delaney came into this incarnation, there was almost a resistance to it. Now, hidden inside this chart is a chart within a chart, which is a play within a play, which actually pops out on the Uranian wheel. It doesn't exactly pop out on a contemporary astrological wheel like it pops on the Uranian wheel, because you see in the Uranian wheel that the Saturn-Jupiter that's in the 12th house is connected directly to the zero point and to the sun. But when you look at a regular contemporary chart, you see that the 12th house has Saturn and Jupiter in it, and the third has the sun in it. So a lot of astrologers wouldn't put that together right away. And 12th house placements are people like Gandhi had 12th house placements, Janis Joplin, 12th house placements. There's a lot of really, Orson Welles, which I could connect kind of to Delaney, has 12th house placements. And the 12th house is the first actors, and when I work on a chart, I look at, because I am from the theater, I think of the planets as actors and the signs as costumes they wear and the house that they're in as the stage that they're on. So we have Saturn and Jupiter first up in the 12th house after the gestation point. Now, Taurus is connected to, for me, to the seed, the underground seed. And in order to open a seed, you have to water it, you have to nurture it, you have to do all of those wonderful things, or the seed will just stay a seed. And we know, you know, there are billion trillions of seeds that drop in the backyard, but only one tree grows. Now, Saturn, the actor Saturn, the planet, has the cross on the top, and underneath it has a glyph like the moon. If you do a line on the other side, it can become a repressed heart under the ground. So it's repressed and depressed, and it gets a lot of bad press, okay? Saturn is where we hold, and that's where we hold basic belief systems and thoughts and things that is unfinished business, and that's when where we hold our victim consciousness, which means we repress, after something happens to us, we repress the feelings. A good example of that is I was watching a show on television where this girl was talking about being molested when she was a child with a smile on her face. And the therapist said to her, "Why are you smiling?" And she said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "Because it's not a funny story. It's not a funny story." And the girl goes, "I always smile. I smile all the time." She said, "Try to tell that story without smiling." So that meant, you know, she was telling this story. Oh, it wasn't too bad, I wasn't hurt. But she was smiling to get through it. So really, she was repressing it. Unless you come to the place with Saturn where you can tell the story and feel the feelings, mm-hmm. You can't collapse the energy. You can't collapse the energy around it unless you feel those feelings. And we see people do it all the time. Oh, they say that was nothing, or they project it onto somebody else. And so when you have Saturn in the 12th, it's real hard to get to because it's the mystery house. It's the house of divine mystery. But it's also the house where the ancient stories are told. It's also the house of the stories of, in some way, the gods, and in some ways, the Scrooges kind of thing. So then, right next to this, though, on top of it, conjunct out of an entire circle, a 360-degree wheel, is Jupiter. It's right there. And all of these are in connection with the sun. Now, Jupiter's made just the opposite. Jupiter is the round curve on the top with a cross underneath. So there, the heart is out on top, which is expansion. So what Jupiter is Saturn flipped over. So
wow.
That means basically what Saturn is the miser, and what Jupiter is the divine child. So there couldn't be a better person playing Scrooge in the house of the plays and the mysteries. So it's almost like this channel was born to do this. And then the next thing up is Uranus. Now, Uranus is made with two lines and a little ball at the bottom of it, but Uranus rules Aquarius, and Uranus means instant forgiveness, instant radical forgiveness. So that, he has Saturn, Jupiter, and Taurus, and then Uranus next in that house, the 12th house. So it means the miser, the divine child, the three ghosts, past, present, and future, and then Uranus hits, and it's like he becomes instantly the divine child. So that is in the chart. And then on the ascendant, which I call the mask we wear in this world, or how we're going to present ourselves to the world, is Gemini. And Gemini is the playwright. Gemini is the storyteller. Gemini is. When Delaney went for a meeting of how I think, you know, that everybody was going to deal with Three Mile Island, he went into the group that was theater. He went into that group, not any of the other groups, but the group that where they created street theater and where he started to write plays. So when I look on the Uranian wheel, I'm very interested to see, and it's hard to explain, but I'm going to, that at 15 degrees, the moon is at 15 degrees of the cardinal sign. Now,
there's another 15.
There's another 15, which means 15, Saturn, Jupiter rounded out to 15, and the moon is at 15. And it was interesting because when I first did my Uranian chart, my Uranus, Sun, and Saturn just popped at 14 with Mars, and you don't see that on a regular chart. That's called a T-square of unit in a Uranian wheel. So it means, basically, 15 was an important age, but the moon in the Uranian wheel, you see right away that one was at 15, and then the fixed signs start. So when he was 30 years old, his moon came to this Saturn, Jupiter, Sun, which was the zero point, which almost means, basically, that around that age or in those years is where he's really going to start to do the incarnation of why he came to Earth. Now, the moon in this chart, the first house is where the hero is or the victim. And, you know, there's Venus in Cancer in this house. And Venus in Cancer, Venus to me is the childhood connection with this is mine and I want this and, you know, stuff. And until we really grow up, it's about stuff and this is mine. And the child goes, don't take my toys. Venus in Cancer is pretty also connected to the earth and the world and how the environment is being treated. Okay, how the environment is being abused or how the environment, because for me, Cancer represents the womb, and then in regular astrology, it's said, you know, to be the mother, and then it spreads out to the family and the community. But I have a little ball on my table here that whirls all the time like a marble. It's the world. And I always think of the astronauts when they were out there, and one of them said, first I saw, you know, geography, then I saw the geography of the world, I saw the states, and then I saw the continents, and then when they got way, way out, he said, my God, I just saw home. I just saw this tiny place, and it was home. That always that always really struck me about cancer, because they say they're really homebodies, and they say, but a lot of cancers will check on home, but they're more, a lot of them are interested in the world. And so the second house where you create your experience, he has Juno, which is an asteroid. And Juno, the asteroid, is, they almost get caught in the headlights and say, in the second house, I can't really get this out there right now because there's just no place to put it. And the, but Vesta is in that house, in an asteroid, which is the divine flame of I will. Vesta is like the stairs that go up at the Olympics. And they run up and they light the eternal flame. That's what Vesta is. And then Chiron in Cancer is the key, which means Three Mile Island in some way was the key to opening this up, a catastrophe. And then Mercury in Cancer is writing about it to the world. But the Capricorn gestation point means that he wrote about it in the solstice plays. He wrote about it, you know, in his plays, and of course his book is called In the Pastures of the Sun, which, you know, I think is quite appropriate for Delaney. But, you know, it's about the solar myths. It's about, he wrote plays about the ancient festivals and that kind of thing. And so this Cancer house, Mercury in Cancer, is directly across from the gestation point in the chart of what he came in to do. The third house is the house of the playwright, and that's where his son is, okay? And what that house is about is really basically people do and say what works or what changes people's lives. They write it down, or they tell stories, or, and that's where the sun is at 15 degrees. And so it began, and then in the fourth house, where you have to change, you have to acknowledge something to change it, is Mars and Leo. So the action of getting in the plays and doing the plays and directing the plays, and it was the way to go. It was the action of this chart. And then Neptune is in Virgo, of course, you know, in 1940, and the Neptune in Virgo is about, for me, Virgo is mentally, physically, emotionally, and the glyph turning in is spiritual. It comes from inside, Neptune in Virgo. It's an inside kind of thing. And then the fifth house has the moon in Libra. Now, the interesting thing at 15, as I said, the interesting thing about the moon in Libra is that is the end of this bowl. It is the end of it. So it started with the south node in Aries, the intercepted play, and down here, the end in the fifth house started in the 11th, and down here, the moon at 15 degrees of Libra, and both, the moon is in this intercepted house. It means the sun's going to move to there eventually in the life too. But what happens in this chart is the moon is this side of the chart. The moon immediately starts moving out and becomes the handle to the bowl, which I think is absolutely fantastic because the moon becomes the reflection of the whole other part of the chart. Because the moon is moving, you know, it moves very fast. You know, it moves a sign every 2.5 years. So it starts to move right away. And it moves through this house, and then it moves through the 6th, the 7th, the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th. What's happening right now is, and Moon in Libra, I was interesting because I was working very much with lead and very much with gold of the sun, and the lead, which is his gestation point, that's Capricorn, is lead, and Saturn rules lead, so that was the first planet up, it rules lead, and the sun rules gold, the divine child in this chart. I picked up my foot as I was sitting here working, looking at the chart, and there was a penny under it, okay, which is copper. And I went, how did copper get in this story? Well, I thought nothing of it. So I went down to get in the car and was riding along, and I picked up my foot, and there was another copper penny. So I went, okay, this is interesting. So then we were going out to a drumming concert, and it was snowing a lot, so we came back and stopped to get some lottery tickets, in Turkey Hill, and I dropped my glove in the car. So I got outside, and when I stepped outside, there was a copper penny laying there. And the copper penny, I picked it up, and I went, well, I better, this is a trinity of pennies. And the ghost is, there's three ghosts in Scrooge. One comes at 1 o'clock, one comes at 2 o'clock, and one comes at 3 o'clock, you know? So there's a trinity of ghosts in this. So I get in, and I come home, and I have these beautiful titanium earrings. They're very precious, and I found out one was missing. And I went, oh, no, oh, no. So this metal earring was missing. So I went, it was Sunday, and we went to our group. We have this group at the art studio, and then we had a friend, and then we went to eat, and then we went home, and we didn't go where we usually go for the New York Times, so we went around a whole other way, and we ended up at the same Turkey Hill by accident. So Joanne ran in for the New York Times, and I was in the passenger side, and so then all of a sudden she came to her door, the passenger door, and all of a sudden she leaned down, I couldn't see her, and she got up, and she said, is this your earring? So where the copper penny I picked it up is exactly where my earring dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And it had snowed, and it had done all this stuff. And there it was, and it was on the passenger side. And all of the things were open in front of Turkey Hill. And if we'd have parked anywhere else, we wouldn't have found it. And it was almost like, you know, me, I'm like, I'm into this whole thing. I'm like, my God, the copper is transmuting now into titanium. The almost the earring for a while replaced the penny, you know?
Yeah.
And it was early in the morning when we were going to group, and we went to McDonald's, and I had these three pennies in my pocket, and Joanne went, oh, I'm a penny short. So I gave up one of the pennies. I said, oh, you know, I'm just going to give up one of the pennies. So it was interesting. I gave up the penny, and the earring came back.
Hey, why don't we bring Delaney on?
Okay, well, yeah, good. Is he there?
I think I'm here.
Yeah.
Hi,
there
Delaney.
You are.
Hi, Sheila.
Hi.
Yeah. How are you doing? I mean, it sounds like you're doing great.
I'm doing great. You sound good, too.
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm
hey.
Still here.
Hey, Delaney.
Right.
I want you to meet my friend Joan Adams.
Hi, Joan.
Hello, Delaney. We're so excited about next week.
Yeah, me too. It's the first time for me to do something like that.
Oh, it's going to be fun. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I hope it comes across.
Oh, it will.
Yeah.
It will.
It will. Yep, we're all excited.
Yeah, well, it's I don't know if you want me to talk about it, but it's different because, you know, I won't be there in 3D. I'll only be my voice, so I've got to do everything with my voice. And
mm-hmm.
That'll be, you know, I'm looking forward to trying that.
Well, it's back to the olden days of radio, you know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's right. It should be for radio anyway. I want to see if it works on radio. That's one thing I'm interested in.
Well, you remember the Inner Sanctum and all those?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to work terrific.
Yeah, well, it's the reason I question it is that I don't have a lot of he says, he she says. You know, I don't
mm-hmm.
really say, you know, Scrooge said blah, 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 and then the ghost of Pan said blah, 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 blah. I just speak as the characters, and that's why I'm hoping that it plays right, you know, because I have to change my voice, and I do that anyway, and I'm hoping that it'll read on radio, and I think it will.
Oh, I think it
well, it's a great experiment, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then
it's
it'll
a
be
new
in the archive,
art form.
Right? Yeah, it'll be in the archives, right? So it'll exist
yeah.
forever.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. The
Any,
archives.
Anything, anything you put
So it better be good.
Anything you put on the internet stays there forever.
Forever, I know. So it better be a good show is all I can say.
And it translates instantly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, I had the funny feeling someone was talking about me, and I couldn't believe all I heard. It was, like, amazing.
Yeah.
Well, do you know the interesting thing about the whole thing is on October the 16th, 2007, you know that your progressed moon went into Aries, which is the intercepted house.
No, I didn't.
No, it's the intercepted house, and when it went into Aries, your progressed sun in Libra is in the house in the opposite place, and this is this intercepted house,
right.
The play within the play.
Right.
And it's almost like you've taken the art, you know, it's like you've taken the art from the whole play and the big play, and then it's almost like in alchemy it goes down and down and down until you've simplified it into a one-man show. Not simplified, but you know what I mean.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is simplified. I'm proud of that.
and then you say Aries, which is the pioneer thing, and you're just talking about the pioneering in going into this, the new adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that's the beginning of the bowl again. It's the beginning of the moon going through the actual actors or the actual planets on this side of the chart.
Right. Now, and this had to have happened before, like maybe like 30 years ago.
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
It happened before.
Yeah, right. I wonder, offhand, do you know when the last time this happened? Like how many, you know, like what day, what year it happened before when it started this way again?
I can do that, but Delaney, I'm not as good at it. I can do that immediately in my head.
Yeah, just so, you know, approximately. it is a 30-year cycle, am I right?
Yes, it's a 30, well, really, the lunar return is a 26-year cycle, 26 to 27.
Oh, okay.
And the Saturn return is a 30-year cycle. So you always have a lunar return before you have a Saturn return.
Oh. So say around the age of 27, 28. It would have been the first one.
It would have been the first lunar return.
Lunar return. So
now this is in the opposite position. See, your son, your son, when you were 15 years old, because your son, as I told you, your son is at the fixed point of the Aries point,
uh-huh.
And Saturn, Jupiter, which is Uranian astrology, is a little different because I love it because everything is, it just pops for you. But it means, basically, that when you were 15, your son went into Virgo, right?
Yes, okay.
Okay, you're 15, and then you add 30 onto that, and at 45, your son went into Libra.
Right, okay.
And so then your son went into the sign where the moon is.
Right.
Are you with me?
Yes.
Okay, so now you're soon
progressions now, right?
I'm talking about secondary progressions,
right.
Not Uranian progressions.
Right.
And so basically what's happening here is your moon is in opposition to your natal moon.
At this point in time?
At this point in time it is.
Yeah, I see. All
right. Okay, so your moon right now is at 25 degrees of Aries, okay? And in May the 1st of 2000, next year, 2010, May the 1st, 2010, it will progress into Taurus. Now, when it progresses into Taurus, that means, for me, the 11th house is the seed born, the one and the many and the many and the one. But when it progresses into Taurus, then it goes back in. It's heading toward the 12th house again, where the Saturn Jupiter is.
Right.
So in many ways, you're almost starting a whole new career.
Yeah, you know, it feels that way. That's quite right. Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that I did. I can't find it right now, but I do a major graft. Okay, the graft goes. For it progresses through the year. Now, what happened here on August the 6th, the eclipse hit your sun. Do you know that?
You're talking about last August 6th.
Yeah, I'm talking 2009.
Yeah, I did.
August the 6th, it was at 14 Aquarius, but in the Uranian astrology, when it hits any of the middle of the fixed signs, or wherever it is, it means something catastrophic happens to open you up in some way.
Right, and in fact, we had an incredible storm here at that moment. when the full moon, down here, it's probably the same where you are, the sun and the moon.
Yeah.
The sun was setting as the moon was rising.
Yes.
And we had an incredible storm then. We couldn't see the moon rise, but, I mean, we didn't have to ask what it meant because it was this storm that they had to close down the big Bay Bridge tunnel. And, you know, beaches were washed out and electric poles were popping. And but I don't remember what happened to me personally on that particular day.
Well,
I know I wrote a poem about the incident.
Yeah. Well, the graph basically shows you then there was a key there because Chiron, I work with Chiron, goes over there on the graph. Then I move over to the graph, and then the next thing that pops is there's a connection in October with Chiron and the nodes. Now, the nodes are very interesting in your chart because the nodes are from the gestation point where I work, are the first thing up. So you have the south node in Aries in this intercepted house. To explain an intercepted house, I go like, of course you understand La Mancha, you were in it all those times. La Mancha is a play within a play, you know?
Yes.
So you're really, really Don Quixote comes down into the prison, and in order to save his neck, he has to go into the imagination, right?
Yes.
And then he creates this whole divine world in many ways.
Right.
So that, for me, is a play within a play. And then there's a third play, almost, where his relatives come up and make fun of him in the middle of the play.
Yes, right.
But then the whole thing happens when she gets raped and he has to face himself in the mirrors of his life.
Yeah.
And he mirrors back all of the, in many ways, unfinished business. Where he has to take responsibility for everything that he's created in his whole existence.
Right.
And then at the end, when Eldonza comes in and he's dying, and Sancho says, I'm sorry, my lady, and he almost comes back. They start to sing Dulcinea, and I want to go on the quest again, and then he dies. And not until the sixth time did I realize that the most profound moment in the play was he said, I'm so sorry, my lady. And she said, I didn't know this man. He must have been a nice man. But I knew Don Quixote de La Mancha.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the profound thing about that was that she was going to stay in the transcendent spot. She was going to stay in the Dulcinea place. And then it comes up on the prison, and she stands up and starts to sing The Impossible Dream. And then each person stands up and sings it, which means they've all gone into that spot. And no matter what the Inquisition did, they were still in that spot. And that's the play within the play. And that's, you have that intercepted house. That's the way I define it in a chart.
So then the play becomes the reality.
Yes, the play becomes the reality, but in your chart, it's the story within the story within the story. Or the play within the play within the play.
Okay.
And as I said,
sounds like mirrors.
Yeah, well, yeah, and then there's those mirrors that come up when the knights turn the mirrors around.
Yeah.
I found when I did it in the round, the audience cringed because the mirrors were so tight on them.
Oh, yeah.
They could actually see themselves.
Yeah.
In the proscenium, it wasn't as bad because there is a distance, you know, with the stage.
Yeah.
And there's kind of that separation.
Yeah.
But then, if you think about Scrooge, it's also a play within a play.
Right.
It's also that whole thing. And, you know, I wanted to watch the new one, and I thought, oh, no. But last night, I stayed up till 3 o'clock in the morning and watched the one from 1940.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That was quite neat in the middle of the night, you know, to watch these.
I bet, yeah. Who plays Scrooge?
I don't know his name. I should know it. But, you know, they didn't have the technology, and they didn't have all of this stuff.
Yeah, I know. It's probably better.
Yeah, and in some ways, you know, I got this thing in my heart at the end.
Yeah.
it was so profound in many ways.
Yeah.
But the line, you know, that Christmas past said when she said, "I am gratitude and forgiveness."
Uh-huh.
She says that line to him, and then shows him, you know, the really shows where the play comes from, which is the fact that he was at a private school and just left there.
Yeah, yeah.
He was just left, and everybody went home, and he was there, and right away you could see, you know.
Right, right, and you get the idea that his old man was probably an alcoholic and who who abused him. Yeah.
Yes, and I work a lot in Kennett Square with the horse people and stuff.
Oh yeah, what do you mean with astrology?
Yeah, with astrology, I do a lot of work there,
yeah.
And this woman that I'm working with right now is writing a book, but it is a profound world of loneliness. Like that. It means, you know, one of the women I worked with, and, you know, it's, you know, they tell profound stories of how they're left and sent to New York to live during the week and only can come home on weekends. And there's just all of this kind of profound loneliness that goes on in that world.
Huh.
Where a lot of people say, oh, if you're wealthy, you're happy.
Yeah, right, right.
And I find that there is—it's really misery.
Yeah, yeah.
And misery in many ways.
Yeah, and certainly Scrooge is like that, and full of fear. Full
yes.
Of fear of losing his fortune.
Right. Which is doing him no good anyway.
Right. Exactly. It's ruining him. In fact, it's leading him straight after Marley to hell. Marley is in hell.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting thing to play because most Marleys are not really, you know, the whole thing about the version that I try and do, and I really kind of got turned on to this by Gary Smith at Theater of the Seventh Sister,
mm-hmm.
who had the original long version that I was in.
Mm-hmm.
He adapted that, but then what we really both of us truly agreed on was that the way the story is normally told. It almost hides the major themes, rather than actually emphasize them, and even when in the production that Seventh Sister does, you know, there are these moments of puffery, I call it, where
mm-hmm.
you know, so that you don't offend the audience too much by showing them darkness.
Ah.
But by and large, Gary's version is very clean, and I thought. Having been on stage through that version, I thought there are some parts of this show that I know drag because I'm there.
Yeah.
I know dragging, you know.
Yeah.
And so what if we just cut them out? What if, you know, and that was where I began to get the idea that if
mm-hmm.
we just cut them out and just told the story, the absolute clean, bare-bones story, and I still have, like, 22 characters in it, but you know, and so that was what I tried to do. And people don't even notice that the other stuff isn't there.
Nope, they don't.
Yeah, they think they're getting. They think they're getting the whole thing.
I think that probably was the most interesting about the 1941s too.
Hmm.
You know, there wasn't all the technology.
Yeah, I know. Right, right. All the temptation.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You haven't seen the Disney version, have you?
No.
The new one that's out. Oh, no, I haven't either. I don't.
Well, that's the one I was trying to get. I was going to go see, but I just couldn't. The Jim Carrey one.
Yeah.
I just couldn't. Did you see it? I just.
No. I may see it sometime, but I don't want to see it right now.
No, I wouldn't.
See, was it the 1938 version of the Christmas Carol you saw last night?
Yeah.
Okay, that was Reginald Owen as Scrooge.
That's who it was. Yes.
Oh, okay. That was
and Gene. Yeah. Well, there's a lot more even before that.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm.
There was a 1935 British movie starring Seymour Hicks as Scrooge. But Gene Lockhart and Kathleen Lockhart play the Cratchits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me just say something here. Now, there's two other people on the line who probably want to say hello. I will take them in order of appearance. The first one is a 717 area code. I'll just bring them on. If they want to say something, they can. If not, hello there. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, hello. Anybody there?
Are you speaking to me? This is Joanne. Was it my number? I'm listening.
Hi, Joanne.
Hello.
Hi, Joanne.
This is good. It's so good to hear Jelani.
How are you?
Oh, I'm great, and it's good to hear you.
Yeah,
thanks. Yes, and good luck next week. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
Yes.
It should be.
It's going to be very cool, yeah.
I'll just be able to be at home and talk into the phone.
Yes.
It'll be like a rehearsal.
It's easy.
You know, there's a play within a play, because I hear Joanne in the other room, and I hear Kate on the computer, and I hear Delaney, and I you know, it's like, whoa.
Confusing.
I'm going to get Jala in on this.
Yes.
Well, I had Delaney's chart up here. I was trying to find what age he wanted that change, and I couldn't get it straight.
We'll find it, and we'll put it on your
right.
Delaney. We'll just put it on your site, okay?
All right.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Is Joanne gone?
She doesn't have to be. I can mute her if she likes. But I think this might be Sid.
I'm on here. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Of course.
I have something to add. I heard on NPR that Charles Dickens used to do the play himself, just like you're doing, Delaney. He did it over 100 times.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, well, he read it.
Yeah, he read it, right,
yeah.
Right.
And
that was the way he presented it.
Right, and I knew that, and I did know that, and I think, and at times I feel a camaraderie with him about this.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, I do. I feel like we're kind of on the same page, you know, there's a kind of, it's not exactly a channel, but well, maybe it is, but whatever it is, I feel like bonded. But he apparently did the whole thing. You know,
wow.
Uh-huh.
That was in the days when people had a much longer attention span. Can you imagine a man
yeah.
somewhere listening to a man read, even if it's a good reader, can you imagine like listening to him read this whole thing?
Probably took hours.
Yeah, it would take several hours, right.
yeah.
I'm finding children have a really long extension. You know, they listen to you. You can read, my grandson, you can read and read and read. It gets shorter as you get older, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. especially when you start to, you know, get into the technology.
Uh-huh.
And the instant, everything's instant. But
ADHD. Yeah. Yeah, I actually, you told me that a few weeks ago, and I put it on the interview lens that we did together.
Yeah.
Because I find that to be, I think it would be really cool to read the Christmas Carol to children and see how long they can stick with it.
I just have to say that lens, Delaney, that she did for you is just beautiful.
I know, it is, isn't it?
It's just incredibly, if anybody listening can go to that, it's really quite beautiful.
Yeah,
I'll check it out.
It's www.squidoo.com/Ebenezer. _Scrooge. I'll put it up in the
chat room. That should be simple enough.
And it is.
You better say that again.
I'm putting it up in the chat room because there's a lot of people there, by the way. www.squiddoo.com /Ebenezer_Scrooge.
Yes, it should be a big audience next week.
Well, that would be great.
Yes, it should be.
Yeah.
I'm trying to organize Prosper Ridge in California to listen, as well as friends in Milwaukee, Mexico.
Oh, great.
My goodness.
Oh,
right.
We'll make it international.
Yeah.
I'll be in the toilet at 5:30 on the...
No.
Just channel Dickens. You'll be all right.
We only have 50 seconds left on the show tonight. So.
Okay.
What a great
Hi, Joan. We didn't hear you for a while.
That was fabulous. Oh, I'm just listening. I'm fascinated with all of you.
All right.
It's wonderful.
All right, sweetie.
See you next week.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Yeah,
bye.
Thanks so much for the reading.
And, Delaney, it will be a 90-minute session next week, so you don't have to worry about rushing or anything like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And well, we can figure out the logistics about, you know, introduction and all that. We can do that among ourselves, between ourselves.
Yeah. That'll be very cool.
Good enough.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you soon then. Thanks for having me.
Right.
Love you all.
Bye-bye.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
I'm going to play music
too.
Now.
Bye.
Music.
Everybody loves everybody. Right, bye.
Love, 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 love.